whatever enchantment the hag was using to appear beautiful was interrupted by her eating. Arlo watched as the hag's ankles turned deep blue, with boils and scars erupting. Worms slithered just beneath the skin. Her toenails were actually jagged black talons, scraping on the stones. With a groan, she was gone. Arlo could only guess that she had climbed on top of the boulder to get a better view of the moraine field. Arlo knew he needed to stay put. As seconds turned to minutes, he started to shiver, as much from adrenaline as from the cold. His left foot was going numb. Plus, he couldn't really breathe. To distract himself, Arlo silently mouthed the words to the vow. Loyal, brave, kind, and true, keeper of the old and new, I guard the wild, defend the weak, mark the path, and virtue seek. Forest spirits, hear me now, as I speak my ranger's vow. Arlo smiled. It was the first time he had gotten the right words in the right order. Assuming he escaped the hag, and found his friends, and somehow made it out of the Longwoods, assuming he survived at all, he would earn squirrel rank for sure. But first, he needed to move. He couldn't risk staying in this spot any longer. The icy water seeping through the rocks would eventually lead to hypothermia. He needed to find somewhere drier to hide. He very slowly began to inch his way towards the light. His shirt buttons caught on a tiny ledge of rock. There wasn't room to wedge his fingers in to help, so he exhaled completely, sucking in his chest. That did it. He wiggled his way past the obstacle and took a deep breath. Arlo listened for claws, for footsteps, for grit sliding between the rocks. There was nothing but the wind. If the hag was close, she was completely silent. He reached his hand around the edge of the rock. Then he heard it, the tinkling bells of a cat's collar, the sound of the purple goo. He froze. It was close. It had to be the hag, except, funny, he hadn't heard it when she was standing right there. Maybe she had magically rid herself of the goo. Then why was he hearing it now? He slowly pulled his arm back under the rock. Again, he heard the jingling. It was coming from him. He turned his cuff around to find the spot of purple goo on his sleeve. He sighed with relief. Then, a scream. It was a girl. Julie, not Indra. She was far away. Arlo scooted the rest of the way out, trying to get his bearings. It was starting to rain. Snow, actually, but it melted as it fell, forming a fine mist.
Help! Somebody!
The voice was coming from down the slope. He climbed up on a boulder, surveying the field. Connor was nearby. He spotted Wu about halfway down, trying to find a way up. Then he saw the hag. She was far down the slope, dragging Julie by the hair. They were atop a flat boulder. A thunderclap. The hag looked up at Connor, curious. He shot three snaplights at her. They didn't hurt, but they distracted her enough that Julie was able to wriggle free, escaping back down between the rocks. Another snaplight whipped past, this time from a different direction. It had to be Jonas. Then a third, which fell short. Indra. Wu was trying too, but the light never left his fingers. Keep trying, shouted Connor. Distract her! Arlo looked at his dirty hand. He had no idea if he could actually throw a snaplight. He'd never even gotten a shimmer. But he had to try. He cocked his arm like he was pitching a baseball. As his hand rose, he felt a tingle, like static electricity. It was the same energy he sensed in the rope when he was tying the knot, only this time, it was inside him. He pressed his thumb to his third finger. A spark. A rush. Arlo could sense the air bending around him. In one smooth motion, his elbow straightened. His hand flicked forward. His index finger pointed directly at the hag. And he snapped. The light was blinding, like a camera flash in a dark room. It crackled as it left his fingertip, tracing a straight line through the air. It didn't arc. It was too fast. Too strong. He could see the mist ripple, a radiant crease in the air. The bolt hit the hag square in the chest, blasting her off the rock. Arlo watched as she fell out of sight. He looked at his hand in disbelief. A snap light shouldn't do that. It was just light, after all. No heat, no force. Yet it had hit her like a cannonball.
"What was that?" shouted Wu.
"I don't know." The air smelled like lightning. Arlo checked his fingertips. They were raw and red from climbing the rock, but not scorched. He had no idea how he'd done it, or if he could ever do it again. Down the slope, Julie carefully climbed up on the boulder, looking over the edge.
"Guys, come down here."
Arlo and the rest of the patrol made their way down to her. Other than scrapes and bruises, none of them were hurt. Arlo was the last to arrive at the edge of the moraine field. The last to see what had happened. The hag had fallen on one of her spikes. It had skewered her through the chest, leaving her dangling helplessly a few feet off the ground. There was no blood. The wound was completely dry. In fact, everything about the forest witch seemed desiccated. Her blue skin was rough as bark. Her fingers looked like bent twigs.
"She's turning into wood," said Indra.
Arlo could see she was right. The change had started in her chest, but was quickly spreading. In a few moments, she would transform completely. The hag's dark eyes, fast becoming tree knots, fixed on Arlo. He stepped closer, unafraid. He felt a mix of pity and disgust.
"Why were you trying to kill me?" he asked.
The hag smiled, a few teeth falling out. She lifted her twig hand, pointing at Arlo's mismatched eyes.
"Tobal,"
she whispered. And then she was gone. Arlo could feel her spirit depart, leaving behind just a wooden husk. Whatever answers the hag might have had, she took them with her. 30. The Way Back. The hag was gone. With her passing, the spiky roots began retreating back into the dirt, leaving small pockmarks across the valley floor. As it descended, the hag's wooden body cracked into pieces, indistinguishable from common kindling. The pine tree kept burning. Its magic was apparently independent of hers. The fire that had seemed so menacing was now almost comforting. It reminded Arlo of that first campfire at Ram's Meadow, back before all their lives were in peril. Standing around the sled, the patrol drank from their water bottles. Connor gathered the ward stones, just in case. Indra reattached the rope. The twins rinsed their scrapes and applied bandages. No one spoke. They were too exhausted, too keyed up. Wu finished the last of his water. He screwed the cap back on.
"Guys," he asked, "how do we get out of here?"
They were all thinking the same thing. While the hag had been the immediate threat, the bigger concern was geography. They were in the wrong world, without any idea how to get back to their own. Julie spoke first.
"We need to stay put. That's what our parents taught us when we were little. When you're lost in the woods, you look for an open space and stay there. That way the search parties can find you."
"Like they found Connor and Katie?" asked Indra.
She immediately regretted her tone. Julie was close to tears.
"I'm sorry. It's just that no one knows we're in the Long Woods. We can't expect anyone to find us here. At least, not anyone we want to find us."
"What do you mean?" asked Connor. Indra traded a look with Arlo.
"In the hut, we saw the hag talking with someone. Magically. They weren't there in person, but there's definitely someone else involved. It's safe to assume they're on their way."
"Then we have to go," said Connor. "We'll climb to the top of the valley and scout it out. Pick a direction and go."
"What about the sled?" asked Wu.
"We leave it here. Carry what we can."
Wu was aghast. "We're not giving up, Mr. Henhao. He's part of the patrol."
Jonas rolled his eyes. "It's a busted chair and old skis. Get over it."
"We came in second," shouted Wu. "That's really good."
"At least we made something, Jonas,"
said Indra. What have you two ever done, other than complain and get rescued? Connor got between them.
Enough! All of you!
The patrol went silent. Julie was now freely crying. She shrugged off her brother's attempt to comfort her.
It's hopeless, she said, shaking her head. We're going to die here, aren't we?
No, we're not, said Arlo. I can get us home.
While his friends were arguing, Arlo had pulled out his compass. The needle was still spinning in a slow circle, but as he turned, he felt something. The slightest buzz. It wasn't north. It was something else altogether. Back when he was practicing on his driveway, he had learned to ignore the phantom vibrations. Now he realized they were indicating something real. Paths into the Longwoods. Here, standing in the woods, the compass was showing him the way back out.
How sure are you? Asked Connor. On a scale of 1 to 10.
Arlo was honest.
Maybe a 6 or a 7? I know something is there, but I can't be sure.
For all we know, it's pointing him deeper into the woods, said Jonas.
If he's wrong, we're worse off than before.
Worse is probably on its way right now, said Indra. We can't stay here. It's too dangerous.
Wu stepped forward.
Why are we even discussing this? Look what Arlo did with the rope. Look what he did with the snap light. None of us could do that. Not me, not you, not Connor. Even Christian couldn't do that. I bet those firecrafters at the bonfire last night, they couldn't do that. No one can do what Arlo can do. So if he says he thinks he can get us out of here, guess what? I believe him. I don't need to know why or how. I just need to know which direction to pull the sled, because he's going to get us home. Simple as that.
Indra turned to Arlo. So did Connor. Even the twins faced him. The argument was over. Wu gestured at Arlo's compass.
Which way are we headed?
Arlo pointed. It wasn't the same direction they'd come from, but it was where he felt the vibration.
Okay, let's go.
Wu took his jacket off the sled, putting it on and zipping it up. One by one, the rest of the patrol grabbed their coats. Then, on a count of three, they picked up the sled, carrying it to the nearest snow. Wrapping the tow rope around his glove, Arlo took one last look back at the valley and the burning tree. How long had he been here? An hour? Two? He felt like there was so much more to explore. But it was time to go home. Once they started moving, they were quickly back in their rhythm. Arlo could hear skis and boots on the snow. In the normal world, rangers use their compasses to pick a distant landmark, a specific tree, a mountaintop, a boulder, and head towards it in a straight line. While you were walking, the compass could go back in your pocket. But in the Longwoods, that didn't work. Here, there were no straight lines. The paths were always twisting. Every few steps, Arlo could feel the vibration shifting. It could be as small a change as passing a fallen log on the right or the left. Pick wrong, and you've lost the trail. There was no going back. At the front of the rope, Arlo couldn't see the others' faces, but he was sure they were skeptical of his route. He would be too. At one point, they made a hard right, followed by a hard left in what looked to be an ordinary stretch of trees. But as they came over a small rise, they found the path had taken them somewhere remarkable. A bridge of solid ice spanned a fast-moving river. It looked just wide enough for the sled, no margin of error. Falling in was not an option. Just to the left, the water plunged off a massive cliff. You could see for miles, hundreds of miles, maybe, to a spot where the purple sky met the horizon in a pink-orange glow. All around them, icicles clung to the trees, sparkling in the light. Julie held up her hands like a frame.
I wish I had my camera.
I'm sure cameras don't work here, said Connor. Otherwise you'd see photos from the Longwoods all the time.
Indra agreed.
It's like the wonder times 10.
Jonas pointed out the obvious.
We definitely didn't cross this bridge before.
I know, said Arlo. But this is the way back. I can feel it.
Wu picked up the tow rope. Good enough for me. Nobody fall in.
For a bridge made of solid ice, It was less slippery than Arlo had feared. The frozen spray from the river offered some traction under their boots. And they weren't the first to cross it that day. Indra spotted tracks in the frost.
"A hex lynx," she said. "See how it has six legs? I bet it's hiding in the trees right now, watching us."
After one heart-stopping moment, where the sled drifted dangerously close to the edge, they made it across safely. Arlo led them over the next rise. A minute later, he stopped, confused. "Which way?" asked Connor.
"I don't know. It's gone."
"What do you mean, gone?" asked Jonas. "Are we lost?"
"I don't know. It feels different."
Indra pulled out her own compass.
"It's not spinning anymore. I don't think we're in the Longwoods."
Connor pulled out his compass to check. Arlo quickly raced back the way they'd come. As he came to the top of the small rise, he saw nothing but ordinary trees. The river and the ice bridge were gone.
"She's right," he yelled. "We're back!"
"But where are we exactly?" asked Jonas.
"I don't want to be in Canada," said Julie.
Wu had wandered away from the sled, looking for something in the trees. Suddenly his eyes went wide.
"Guys, guys, come here."
As they approached, he explained,
"This is where we saw the bear. Remember I was taking a leak? This is the tree I was peeing on."
"How do you know?"
asked Indra.
"Because I always write my initials."
He pointed down, where HW was marked in yellow snow.
"Henry Wu."
"You're disgusting," she said, hugging him.
Connor checked his watch. "It's not even 4 o'clock yet. We can still finish." The six members of Blue Patrol looked at one another for a long moment. After surviving the bear, the hag, and the Longwoods, they had completely forgotten about the Alpine Derby. They were exhausted. They needed to eat and sleep. This was no time for pointless pride. Julie spoke first.
"Let's do it. Let's beat Red."
31. The finish line. It was getting dark. The shadows on the snow had faded, leaving only an indistinct gray. A cold wind was rising. Arlo zipped his parka up to his chin. The metal teeth bit into his skin a bit, but he didn't mind. The irritation distracted him from his aching feet and sticky eyes, still stinging from the smoke in the valley. Even without the compass, he was certain they were headed in the right direction. He could see dozens of ski tracks in the snow, but the road seemed endless. They could hear it before they could see it. Just around the bend, 100 rangers and adults were cheering and banging drums. They were almost there. "Let's run the last part," said Connor. Everyone agreed. Summoning their last reserves of energy, the rangers of Blue Patrol came around the final turn of the 49th annual Alpine Derby in a full sprint. 28 of the 30 patrols had already finished. They were mingling around the bonfire and drinking hot chocolate. A girl from Green was the first to spot Blue Patrol emerging from the forest. She rallied a bunch of rangers to cheer for them. It felt a bit like pity. A few of the Red Patrol members looked over. They stayed quiet. The finish line was a bright red board in the snow. Blue Patrol didn't stop running until the sled was fully across it. They were sweaty, cold, and beyond exhausted. Arlo wanted to fall asleep in a hot bath. But there was one more thing to do. Connor waved them together into a huddle. They leaned in, putting their heads together. "Last time," he said. "Everything we've got." They lined up. Arlo was back on the end, the smallest ranger. Voices hoarse, they yelled, "Clap your hands! Stomp your feet! Blue Patrol just can't be beat! Faster than a snowshoe hare, stronger than a grizzly bear! Both tomorrow and today, Blue Patrol will lead the way!" As they were drinking their second cups of hot chocolate, Indra came over to Arlo and Connor.
"I found this in the hut. Didn't want the others to know."
She handed Connor a tarnished silver necklace. A tiny pendant had the initials KC. Connor recognized it. It was Katie's. I don't remember her wearing it, but it was in all the missing persons bulletins. Her grandfather gave it to her. He tried to hand it back.
No, you should have it.
Connor shrugged. She should have it. I'll give it to her parents. He tucked it into his jacket pocket. But I don't know if she'll take it. She doesn't like anyone calling her Katie. She says that was never her real name. Arlo had to keep reminding himself that to Connor, his cousin wasn't missing. She was just living abroad in another country that happened to be another world. Connor was used to it. He had been keeping the secret so long that it no longer felt like a secret. They looked over as the last patrol crossed the finish line. It was time for the results. As all the Rangers gathered near the bonfire, they met up with Wu, Julie, and Jonas.
I've been asking around, and I think there's a chance we came in third, said Wu. Not third in the company, but third out of everyone.
Arlo was confused. How is that possible? We were the next to last patrol to finish.
You get 4 points just for crossing the finish line, said Indra, counting on her fingers, plus 3 points for visiting the stations in order, which we did. That's 7 out of 10 points. The first team to cross could have only gotten 3 more than us.
Which they didn't, said Wu. Red was the first to cross, but they went to signaling before Knots, so they lost those 3 points. And I hear they messed up in Knots. They did a sheep bend instead of a sheep shank.
Man, I would love to beat them, said Jonas. Julie shook her head.
I just want to place. After everything we went through today, I just want to be in the top 3. It's going to come down to spirit, said Indra. We know we have 81 points. Last year, third place was 90. If we get 9 out of 10, we could do it.
The bearded warden climbed up on a stepladder. In daylight, Arlo could see tattoos on his neck, mostly hidden by his giant beard. The crowd quieted. The man called out, Rangers, may your path be safe. In unison, everyone responded, May your aim be true.
48 years ago, the first Rangers raced these mountains. They called it the Alpine Derby. It was not a race of miles and minutes, but of will and conviction, meant to test the ideals of the Rangers' vow, loyalty, bravery, kindness, and truth. For while the obstacles are ever-changing, the virtues with which we confront them are eternal.
Arlo thought back to the valley and their battle with the hag. It wasn't Knots and Snaplights that had saved their lives. It was working together. None of them were perfectly loyal, brave, kind, or true. But they didn't need to be. Between the 6 members of Blue Patrol, there was enough loyalty, bravery, kindness, and truth to go around. The warden looked down to his clipboard.
We had 30 patrols racing this year. Congratulations to everyone who finished. It's now time to call out the top 3 patrols for flags.
Indra grabbed Arlo's and Wu's hands. This was it. If they were getting any award, this was their shot. Arlo held his breath.
Finishing third with 90 points is Moose Patrol of Cheyenne Company.
A cheer went up. Arlo looked over as a group of Wyoming Rangers made their way up the ladder. One of the boys was blind and held his friend's sleeve as they walked. The warden handed them a black flag embroidered with copper thread. They held it high and yelled their patrol cheer. Arlo couldn't even process the words. He sank deep into himself, disappointed in ways that surprised him. Just a few minutes earlier, he hadn't considered the possibility of getting third place. Now that it was gone, the loss stung. He silently vowed to never want anything again, to never be overly hopeful. It hurt too much. Arlo accidentally crossed gazes with Russell Stokes. Russell traced a fake tear down his cheek, mouthing, boo-hoo. Wu caught the exchange,
Ignore him. He's a jerk.
Arlo shook it off. It was stupid to be upset about losing a third-place flag after nearly being killed. As Moose Patrol stepped to the side, the warden climbed the ladder again.
In second place, with 91 points, is Blue Patrol of Pine Mountain Company.
Arlo didn't hear it right. He assumed the warden had said Green Patrol or Red Patrol. But then he saw Indra and Wu jumping up and down. Connor was stunned, wide-eyed. Jonas and Julie were screaming.
"We must have gotten a perfect 10 in spirit," said Indra. "That never happens."
Connor led them through the crowd. The warden descended the ladder, handing them a black flag with the Alpine Derby sigil stitched in silver. Connor passed it down the line. It was just cloth and thread, but it seemed like a priceless artifact. Lining up, they performed their patrol yell again. This time they were out of sync. Wu stomped when he should have clapped. Arlo said grizzly bear in place of snowshoe hare, but it didn't matter. They had their second place flag. The patrol gathered next to the Wyoming Mooses. It was time to announce the winner. Arlo realized then it was going to be Red Patrol. They had beaten the field in the initial race. They were strong at rescue and had no doubt done well at teamwork. He prepared himself to clap and cheer for them when the warden called their name.
In first place, with 93 points, the winner of the 49th Annual Alpine Derby, Green Patrol of Pine Mountain Company.
Wu gasped. Connor looked to Indra, who quickly did the math.
They must have gotten perfect scores at every station, plus spirit.
Arlo took off his gloves to applaud louder as Green Patrol made their way to the ladder to accept their first-place flag. It was larger than the others, with the sigil embroidered in gold thread. Green Patrol's cheer was much more sophisticated, with overlapping sections performed in perfect syncopation. It had no doubt taken months to learn. When it was finished, all the rangers cheered again. Arlo spotted Russell Stokes clapping half-heartedly and immediately understood why Red Patrol hadn't placed in the top three. Spirit wasn't just cheering for yourself. It was rooting for good. 32. Court of Honor. Arlo's dad wanted macaroni and cheese.
Just push the phone down into it. I'll figure out a way to eat it.
JC smiled. You're disgusting. They were video chatting with him on her phone. For a change, the meal times were reversed. It was dinner in Colorado, but breakfast in China.
Arlo, I'm counting on you. The mac and cheese here is just awful. It's like someone saw a picture of it and didn't know what it was supposed to taste like. I'm serious. The box tastes better than what's inside.
Arlo took the phone. He held it steady while shoveling a forkful of mac and cheese into his mouth, making a big show of chewing it.
You're torturing me. Don't you dare tell me it's delicious.
It's so good. So cheesy.
His dad pretended to stab himself with his chopsticks. They were eating at a long folding table in the basement of the church. It was the Ranger Company's twice-yearly potluck dinner. A term Arlo learned meant mostly casseroles and salad. His mom had made baked ziti, as had four other families. Arlo tried a spoonful of each. He honestly couldn't tell them apart, even though his mom had used government cheese from the food assistance program.
"Please stop calling it government cheese," she said. "It's normal cheese. They just give it to families who need a little extra help."
Between waitressing at the diner and bookkeeping for the repair shop, his mom was bringing in enough money to cover most of their expenses. But there were always surprises. One morning they woke up to find the furnace had died and the pipes had frozen. For the next few days, Arlo had melted snow for drinking water and slept in his sleeping bag on top of his bed. It was like camping indoors. Mitch, the mechanic, had helped get everything fixed. He showed Arlo where the shutoff valves were and how to check the pipes for leaks.
"It can be a small thing, just the tiniest hole, but with too much pressure, It breaks wide open.
Mitch had gone to visit his daughter in New Mexico for the weekend. Arlo wondered if his mom would have invited him tonight had he been in town. Arlo's dad asked to meet his friends, so he panned the camera over to Indra, who was sitting with the two doctors Srinivas Raghavan Jones. Indra's mother was a psychologist. Indra asked Arlo's dad about a moth that the field book said could only be found in Asia.
"The moth is less interesting than the cocoon," she said. "You can make a tea out of it that repels scorpions."
"Why would scorpions drink tea anyway?" asked Wu.
Wu's father took the phone and began speaking Chinese with Arlo's dad. Arlo had no idea what they were saying, but there was a lot of nodding and laughing. Meanwhile, Wu's grandfather sat sullenly at the end of the table, picking at a piece of key lime pie. Arlo asked Wu if something was wrong.
"He thought we were going to take him for a ride in the sled again. It's the only reason he came. He doesn't like big groups."
Arlo could understand. A few days earlier, he had invited Uncle Wade. Sort of.
"We have the Court of Honor on Sunday night if you want to come."
Wade pulled a soda from the fridge and shook his head.
"That's not really my speed."
Then he walked out. Wade was spending nearly all his time in the workshop. Arlo hadn't been inside it since the nightmare incident. He was curious to see what his uncle was building, but didn't want to risk their tenuous friendship by pushing too hard. Was friendship even the right word? Arlo had no other uncles, so he wasn't sure what was normal. But Wade felt less like a parent and more like a giant, surly kid. Arlo was convinced Wade had secrets that went beyond the contents of his workshop, but didn't know how or if he would ever uncover them. Wu's parents handed the phone back to JC. When asked about Benji, she sighed. Arlo knew they had been fighting, but he didn't understand what had actually happened. Eavesdropping on JC's side of their kitchen phone conversations, all Arlo heard was,
"You're not listening to me," and, "It's not what you said, it's what I heard," and, "Why would you think I meant that?"
Arlo felt tremendous sympathy for Benji. On the other side of the table, Arlo's mom was talking with Indra's parents about boring stuff like potholes and college tuition. But then Indra's dad asked,
"So, Celeste, why did you decide to move back to Pine Mountain?"
Arlo snapped to attention. He pretended to still be eating, but every brain cell was dedicated to eavesdropping on his mother's answer, filtering all other chatter. "So, you know the situation with Clark?" Clark was Arlo's dad. "And the government, right? I assume it's town gossip?"
Indra's parents nodded.
"It's been a crazy couple of years. After Clark went to China, we moved around a lot, because it turns out places don't want to hire an accountant who is married to an FBI fugitive. Or rent you an apartment. Teachers tell your daughter that her father is a traitor in front of the whole class."
"I'm so sorry," said Indra's mom, touching her arm.
Arlo glanced over at JC, who was happily video-chatting with their dad.
"Don't get me wrong, I'm proud of Clark," his mom continued. "He stood up for what was right, and eventually everyone's going to see that. But it hasn't been easy."
She took a sip from her paper cup of orange punch.
"But you asked how we ended up in Pine Mountain. Basically, I sort of lost it one day."
Arlo tensed up with anticipation. His mom was about to answer the question he had assumed was unanswerable. What had actually happened?
"I was working a temp accounting job in Chicago," she said. "They had me in this back office with a window that looked over the parking lot. So one night, it was a Tuesday, a little after 6, and the lights suddenly go out. That's odd, I think. I go up front and I realize that everyone's left. They've locked the door and set the alarm. They had forgotten I was in the back. I don't have a key, I don't have the alarm codes, I'm just a temp. I don't know who to call. Do you call the police? It's not an emergency, but it sort of is. I'm supposed to be picking up JC from practice and Arlo from after school, and I need to make dinner, and here I am trapped in this terrible office with no way out."
"What did you do?"
asked Indra's father. Arlo leaned in to listen.
"I threw a chair through the window,"
I climbed out, got in the car, and picked up my kids. A few days later, we moved here.
Indra's mother smiled and took her hand.
Why didn't you come sooner?
Arlo watched his mom's reaction. She seemed to be struggling to remember something, like a word on the tip of her tongue. But it never arrived.
I don't know.
Pine Mountain was the last place I thought I'd end up. I can't explain why, but I had this fear of it, like there was something buried here. But honestly, it's been amazing. I'm happier than I've been in a really long time.
Arlo wanted to lean across the table and hug his mother. But that would mean admitting he was eavesdropping. So instead, he just watched as Indra's mom squeezed her hand. He wiped his eyes with his sleeve. He was pretty sure Wu spotted it. Standing up on a chair, Christian announced it was time to start the ceremony. Everyone began clearing the table so the patrols could put them back on the wheeled racks. JC passed the phone to Arlo.
Dad wants to talk to you.
Arlo stepped over to a quiet corner. His dad moved the camera a little closer.
Hey, so, in case we cut out, I just want you to know how proud I am of you. It's great what you've been able to do there.
Thanks. I promise I'm going to find a way to see you and your sister again.
And Mom.
And your mother. I know these last few years have been tough, but we Finches are strong. We'll get through this. Arlo nodded. Never give up, okay? The only way you lose is when you stop trying.
After the Ranger's vow, Arlo sat with his patrol. It was strange to be sitting down for a meeting. Usually they didn't have chairs.
It's mostly for the parents, explained Wu. Adults just can't stand that long. They have weak bones.
Christian stepped up on the tiny stage.
Before we get started tonight, I have an announcement. As some of you know, and many of you probably suspected, I've started work on my bear.
Indra made told-you glances at Arlo and Wu.
I've done everything I can in Pine Mountain, so when school is out, I'll be heading off to complete my training. I want to thank all of you for letting me serve as Marshal of Pine Mountain Company. It's been an honor.
Amid the murmurs, Russell Stokes shouted what everyone was thinking.
Who's taking over?
That's up to the Council of Patrol Leaders.
A new round of whispered conversations erupted. Everyone had an opinion. Diana Velasquez, the Green Patrol leader, stood up and saluted.
To Christian, may his path be safe.
The Rangers responded in unison.
May his aim be true.
The other Greens joined Diana in salute. Indra was the next to stand. Connor joined her, a little embarrassed. Arlo, Wu, and the twins stood as well. Senior Patrol followed shortly thereafter. Only Red Patrol stayed in their seats. Arlo could see some of them rolling their eyes. Russell pretended to throw up. The adults and other guests started applauding, uncertain of the protocol. Indra leaned over to whisper to Arlo and Wu.
Diana is totally going for Marshall. So obvious.
What about Tyler and Red Patrol? I know he wants it, said Wu. Or one of the seniors?
Indra agreed with Wu's picks.
It's going to get messy.
Arlo couldn't even conceive of the company without Christian in charge. Even though it had only been a few months, Arlo was confident no one could do the job as well. He didn't want anything to change. Not here, not at home, not at school. He felt like he had just figured out how everything worked, and now the rules were being rewritten. It was time to award badges and ranks. Each patrol went in turn, standing on the stage while the patrol leader handed out patches. Senior Patrol went first. Two boys had earned their Trailcraft badges, while a girl with thick glasses collected her Serpentry and Barklore. But she didn't look at all happy to receive them.
She failed her ram trial, whispered Indra. She'll have to try again.
Arlo was suddenly panicked, the same dread he felt when a teacher announced a surprise quiz. His own trial of rank had gone well, or so he thought. He had completed his dark walk on his first attempt, even though he'd drawn the most difficult figure, the star. He had recited the ranger's vow and explained what it meant. He had saluted properly and tied all the knots. He couldn't think of anything he had done wrong, and yet they'd never actually said he had passed. Next up was Red Patrol. They mumbled and rushed through the presentation as if too cool to care. Russell Stokes collected his wards and arrowing badges. Kwame Wilson earned his wolf. His mother stood up behind Arlo, taking lots of photos with her phone. Kwame had been one of the five rangers on Arlo's trial, but asked him no questions. Maybe because he already knew he was voting no. Arlo looked at Connor, three seats away. He was holding all of the patrol's new patches in his hand. Was one of them Arlo's squirrel? He was certain Connor would have told him if he'd failed. That is, if he was even allowed to. Green Patrol went next. Instead of simply reading the names and badges, Diana Velasquez had incorporated them into a rhyming poem. It was clever in places. Watch Hope graft her rope craft with forestry for dope rafts. But ultimately exhausting. The adults applauded much louder than the other rangers. Blue Patrol was last. Connor didn't attempt anything fancy as he announced Wu's badges for watching and pathing, and the twins' badges for signaling and tracking. Indra had earned all four of those as well, along with her owl rank. As Connor handed her the patch, Arlo could see the next one in his hand. Squirrel. Congratulations, said Connor, shaking his hand. The squirrel patch was brand new and stiff. Arlo ran his thumb over the threads that formed the squirrel and its acorn, thinking back to Uncle Wade's old patches he had taken off the shirt that first night. He looked out to the audience, where he saw his mom applauding. His sister was holding up the phone so his dad could watch. All of the patches had been handed out, but Connor wasn't finished. We have some special awards as well. From his cargo pockets, he pulled several stones. Arlo recognized them as the red stones Connor had used to build the wards in the Valley of Fire. First up, we have the award for Most Indefatigable, which is a vocab word that means unstoppable. The winner is Indra Srinivas Raghavan Jones. He handed her the rock. She smiled. They both saluted. Next up is Most Optimistic. This can only go to Henry Wu. The rest of the patrol cheered as Wu accepted his rock. For the Most In-Sync Award, wow, we actually have a tie. Jonas and Julie Delgado. The twins took their stones at the same time. Then, without a word, exchanged them. Some of the parents laughed. Connor held the final stone. Last, we have the special prize for heroism and general bravery. No question, the award goes to Arlo Finch. Arlo accepted the rock and saluted with it in his hand. Connor saluted back. Patrol dismissed. 33. A Visitor.
It's cute. I like the tail.
JC handed Arlo his squirrel patch back.
Congratulations.
Thanks. They were standing in front of the church, waiting for their mom, who had gone back in to retrieve the casserole dish she'd forgotten. Most of the cars had already left the parking lot. JC's phone buzzed. She checked the message. A glance to Arlo.
It's fine, he said. You can call Benji.
JC untangled her headphones and wandered off. The moon was a sliver. A fingernail clipping in a sea of stars. Arlo stared at it, keenly aware of the fullness of the sphere. The shadowed section of the moon was always there, even if the light didn't fully expose it. He imagined himself standing on it, looking back at the earth. Would he recognize the country beneath him? Or was beneath even the right way to think about it? The moon was the moon. The earth was the earth. They were bound together, but there was no clear above or below. They were simply sideways to each other, forever spinning through the darkness. Quite a moon tonight. A man was standing beside him. Arlo hadn't heard him approach. He was small for a grown-up, with a mustache that twisted up into points. He was wearing a wool jacket, leather boots, and a fur hat.
"That's a hunter's moon, if I ever saw one."
Arlo didn't recognize him, but he didn't know most of the ranger's parents.
"Actually, a hunter's moon is full."
Every ranger knew that. It was in the field book.
"Try hunting during a full moon and you'll go hungry. Your dinner will see you coming."
He had a trace of an accent. Arlo couldn't place it, but it sounded old-timey.
"Congratulations, incidentally. Quite a thing you did."
Arlo had forgotten he was holding the patch.
"Almost everyone gets squirrel."
"Not that. The bit in the woods. That was unique."
The man looked over. His eyes were pale, almost silver. It wasn't just the moonlight.
"You're one of them, aren't you?"
asked Arlo. The man smiled. His teeth were perfectly white and sharp.
"You're one of the people beyond the woods."
The man shook his head.
"I'm not people. I just dress up sometimes."
"What are you?"
"You can call me Fox."
There was no Mister in front of his name, if it even was a name. Arlo suspected it might be his true form.
"What do you want?"
"To meet the hero. Quite a thing, defeating a hag. That very one nearly took my tail when I was a pup."
Arlo turned to face him directly.
"Why was she trying to kill me?"
"For the bounty." He rubbed his fingers together. "There's a price on your head, Arlo Finch. At least there was. Now some are thinking you may be worth more alive than dead."
"Why? What do they want?"
"Something hidden. Something you may be able to find. But that's for another season. I'll come back when it's warmer."
He adjusted the collar of his coat, preparing to leave. Arlo grabbed the man's arm.
"Am I still in danger?"
Fox laughed.
"A squirrel is always in danger."
He lifted Arlo's hand off his sleeve.
"But keep your spirits up, Mr. Finch. This is where it gets most exciting."
The man took a step forward, pushing past him. With a gust of wind, he was gone. Arlo turned to see his mother approaching. She was carrying the casserole dish.
"You ready?"
she asked. Arlo nodded. He was. This book is dedicated to scouts and explorers, both the ones I grew up with and the ones who inspire me every day. J.A. Discussion questions. The ranger's vow begins with the words loyal, brave, kind, and true. 1. What does it mean to be loyal? Arlo describes loyalty as a promise you never needed to make. Is Arlo always loyal to his friends and family? 2. In what ways is Arlo brave? Does brave mean the same thing as unafraid? What does Arlo's mom teach him about bravery? 3. Is being kind the same as not being cruel? What are examples of kindness in Valley of Fire? What examples can you think of from your own life? 4. What second meaning of true does Arlo learn from Christian? Are loyalty and truth related? 5. If you were writing the ranger's vow, what other qualities would you add to this list? In Valley of Fire, Arlo learns about the wonder, the mysterious force that helps keep the magic of the long woods a secret. 6. What have you encountered in your life that you couldn't capture in a photograph? 7. The adults in Pine Mountain seem to be unaware of the magic in their own backyards. In what ways do you think kids and grown-ups see things differently? 8. If you could learn one of the skills demonstrated in Valley of Fire, such as snap lights, thunderclaps, or slipknots, which would you choose and why? Like many books, Valley of Fire is told from a third-person limited perspective. This means that as readers, we know only what Arlo knows and can look inside only his mind. 9. How would the story be different if it were told from the point of view of Indra or Wu? What would it be like from JC's perspective? 10. Uncle Wade seems to know more than he's telling, particularly about the Yellow Patrol. What do you think the secret might be? The Ranger's Vow. Loyal, brave, kind, and true, keeper of the old and new, I guard the wild, defend the weak, mark the path, and virtue seek. Forest spirits, hear me now, as I speak, my ranger's vow. This concludes the reading of Arlo Finch in the Valley of Fire by John August. Copyright 2018 by John August. This book was read by James Patrick Cronin, a member of SAG-AFTRA. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Writers House, LLC, and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.